This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
I want to give credit to the NFL as we begin today's show. This is major news that I think makes the game a lot better, and it's amazing how responsive the NFL has been. NFL owners have approved an expansion of the league's replay system after the disaster that happened at the end of the Saints-Rams game in the NFC Championship game back in January. Pass interference, both offensive and defensive, will now be reviewable. First penalties in the history of the league's replay system to be added to approved reviews. The replay booth, in conjunction with the league's office in New York, will initiate challenges in the final 2 minutes. Coaches will be limited to 2 challenges per game, with a third awarded if they are successful on the first 2. Again, coaches will be able to challenge non-calls for pass interference. This is a really big deal. Move has been advocated by the Saints since their January 20th playoff loss. And I believe we have Sean Payton talking about the impact of this rule change. Here he is.
If we have gone through a process like this and really with an open heart tried to look at doing what was right, and after much discussion came to a conclusion where ownership, league office, coaches, GMs felt real good about, certainly fans won knowing that, man, those guys are working, you know, hard at the right decision.
That is Sean Payton. I also think we have Roger Goodell reacting to this rule as well.
You will see replay continue to evolve, but I would tell you that I think one of the foundations of it was the challenge system. The clubs really felt that that was important to continue. So I could see it expanding to other plays in the future within the challenge system. The replay has been an important tool for us, and you know, it wasn't able to correct something that we wanted to have corrected in the past. That, to me, it was the driving force ultimately at the end of the day.
Ultimately, all 32 NFL coaches were in favor of this, and I think it makes the game much better. It's the exact solution that I brought to bear on this show in the wake of the way that the Rams and the Saints game went down. I said, look, here's what you need to do. You just need to expand replay within the existing system and allow coaches to challenge the pass interference penalties. If you have the ability to review an instant replay and see whether the call was made correctly, then this will be a system that will not dramatically alter the outcome of games. Evidently it was 31-1, and the Cincinnati Bengals voted against it, Danny G.
Yeah, what a bunch of losers.
That's actually really funny. It makes me even more confident that the right decision was made, that the Bengals managed to decide to vote against it. But I actually, I think this is a dramatic improvement in the NFL. I think the NFL deserves credit for recognizing that an error was made in a major way, and that this is not the only time errors like this occur. And I think it's a way to better strengthen the overall outcome of NFL games. And I think there's nothing wrong. I've said from the get-go, all of officiating is a judgment call, right? Whether or not a guy's knee is down before he fumbled is a judgment call. Whether or not a guy got his foot both feet in for a touchdown is a judgment call. So if you can determine whether a judgment call is correct or not on replay, which we can, then I think we can also do it for penalties. And I love that you're not expanding the number of coaches' challenges. So, you know, a coach is not probably going to throw a challenge flag for a 5-yard pass pattern that ends in a pass interference call, or that's a missed pass interference call, because the coach is going to say, you know what, it's not worth using up one of my challenges on this play in the event that something more substantial and egregious of an error happens. So I don't think this will substantially alter the length of games or anything of that magnitude. I think it's just going to go towards making sure that the team that wins on the field is the team that is reflected as the winner on the scoreboard. So I think this is a big change. I think this is a smart change. I know it's trendy to jump on and rip the NFL for their decision-making, But I think the league, the teams, the owners, and everything surrounding Roger Goodell here, this is the right play. I want to bring in the crew and find out whether or not you guys agree with me. Danny G, is there any doubt at all that this is the right call?
No, this is the right call. I'm surprised how fast they got it done, because obviously the NFL is notorious for taking their sweet time and dragging their feet on rules changes. If you're a Cowboys fan or a Raiders fan, you're scratching your head a little bit, because it took the NFL over 3 years to fix the catch rule and just over 11 years for them to do away with the tuck rule. So this is justice for the whining Saints fans and for you and Cousin Sal losing $60,000.
Yeah, we lost $60,000 on this blown call, but I think what inevitably will happen now is I will be a loser on a gambling bet because of the new rule now. That's the way this thing works. Like, you lose because of the loophole or an error in the rule, and then now that they've changed the rule, I'll be the first person to lose because of the changed rule from a gambling perspective. I just have zero doubt about that. Let me bring in Eddie Garcia. Eddie, are you also in agreement here?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that the Saints game was how this got fast-tracked, but this is just the NFL admitting that with the technology we have and all of the angles and the way football is such a great TV sport, that replay has to be utilized to get these calls right, because the officials can't do the job on their own anymore. And, you know, with the way, you know, pass interference is such a crucial call a lot of times in games, I think they just finally admitted, eventually we're going to get here. Let's go ahead and do it now and maybe work out the kinks and see how it's going to work. But they had to do this.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I have been saying for a long time, the NFL, all these are, there used to be a distinction between, oh, what's a judgment call and what's not. But the NFL will watch the film of every game, great officials, and send a review to the teams to let them know, hey, we got this one right. Hey, we missed this one, to kind of give you an overall guide of how the game was officiated. So they know whether the right call was made or not once they go back and review the film. I don't see this as being particularly difficult at all. Now, I do think coaches are going to have to get better at making decisions about whether or not there was a clear blown call when it comes to pass interference. But I think what you'll see is most of the time they will not challenge sort of bang-bang plays where it's uncertain what the outcome might be. And I think you still have to give discretion to the officials on the field. But in a situation like the Saints-Rams game, I think it's a no-brainer that we'll have to make that decision to go for the adjustment. What about you, Dub? Are you all in right call? I mean, I think we're all going to be unanimous on this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how you couldn't be. I mean, you got to get these calls right. And I'm curious what you think, because with the acceleration of legalized gambling, I think if that wasn't happening, then we may not have seen this rule change, because there's going to be so much money exchanging hands in legal gambling that they got to be able to get these calls right in big games.
Yeah, I think that's a smart angle, too. I saw where Delaware just allowed sports gambling. I retweeted a link recently where my home state of Tennessee is debating whether or not to allow sports gambling. Indiana and Illinois are both close, as is New York State. There are a lot of places that are going to be fully legal by the time football season starts. Probably, I would guess, almost 13 or 14 of our states. And I think when there is real money being wagered in these states, it actually puts pressure on officiating to be even more accurate, because more people, especially in the NFL, where the difference between one team and another team is often very minuscule, one call can make a big difference in terms of the overall win probability, win percentage, or the team that deserves to win versus the team that actually wins. So I think gambling becoming legalized more so across the country actually is going to make the sports better and more responsive to the marketplace, because the marketplace, there'll be more people with money on the line. Roberto, right call?
Yeah, definitely. It's great to see that, you know, they're finally going to get it. Some of these PI calls that are so controversial, they're going to get it right. You know, I was watching the Champions League soccer. It's one of the most competitive tournaments in Europe, and there's a lot of controversial calls there, and they go to the replay all the time. It's good to see that they're going to do the same thing in the NFL now.
Yeah, certainly in soccer, whether or not to call a penalty kick, whether a handball occurred, all those things, whether the ball crossed the goal line, sometimes can be very difficult to know for sure. And Women's World Cup starts up, I think, on June 7th, and that always seems to emerge as a major issue there. My suggestion is if you got the replay angles and you've got the technology to make things better than the human eye can sometimes make them, you got to take advantage of it.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Before the SEC title game, Dub said Auburn and Tennessee are playing, and he said, I got to be the only person in America who gets wagered by employees. Hey, if my side wins, I'll do my job. That's what Dub basically is saying. And certainly on Wednesdays, Dub is on the spot because he's got to answer phone calls and be prepared for the anonymous mailbag and not screw things up, which is a huge battle for Dub. But let's bring in Dub now. So you have a segment. What are your questions here?
Well, I've been thinking about it, you know. But first of all, what a great bet by me. I mean, the value in that play was off the charts. Maybe definitely a top five bet I've ever made personally.
Yeah, I got to be the only boss in America who has employees who say, hey, how about if my side wins, I do my job? That's a really aggressive play by you.
That's the magic of March.
You will actually do your job if your team wins.
It's the magic of March. So I've been tossing some ideas in my head. And at first, I was talking to Danny G last week. And, you know, maybe I do, an oral history of Tennessee sports, but that seemed a little mean-spirited, if we're going to be frank. And then I also had an idea, because I ran across something on Reddit regarding the AT&T Center, where my Spurs play home games, and their issue with bats.
Yeah.
And it could have been like maybe an Animal Thunderdome Hall of Fame nominee, per se. But then I really got to thinking, and in 18 days will be Sunday, April the 14th. And that is the Sunday of Augusta. But more importantly, and I can't believe I'm even saying this because the Masters is so near and dear to my heart, it is also the premiere of the final season of Game of Thrones.
It is an amazing weekend.
Incredible.
In all honesty, we got Game of Thrones coming back on the 14th. And you're right, it is the same weekend as the Masters. So you can, if you are listening to us right now and you're a Game of Thrones fan and a golf fan, which, I mean, there's got to be, you know, a huge overlap, I would think, because even if you're not a golf fan, I feel like people get psyched about the Masters. And a lot of that, I think, depending on where you live, is, let's say you're in the upper Midwest, or let's say you're in the Northeast, or an area of the country where spring hasn't sprung yet. When you see Augusta and see the fact that spring is back, you get excited about, okay, not too long till summer now. I know a lot of people talk about the groundhog. I feel like for much of the sporting public, the Groundhog Day event is you'll watch Augusta and you think, okay, spring is going to be here before long. Winter is almost over. So I think we got winter coming down in the Game of Thrones, and then we've got winter over on Augusta. So spectacular April 14th.
No doubt. So what I was thinking, we let March Madness run its course, okay? And the week leading up to Game of Thrones, there are some wild, wild theories and predictions online. And the best part about this is I don't even have to do any work. I just have to steal other people's work and share them with the nation as far as the theories of Game of Thrones.
A different theory every day the week of the Masters week. And
that's kind of what I was thinking of. Maybe the last segment of each show, I could bring another theory, another, you know, potential prediction, and we can discuss that in the last segment of each show, the week leading up to Game of Thrones. And maybe on Friday, we have a little Masters Game of Thrones prediction special to lead us into the weekend.
No, that's good. I like that. What do you think the reaction would be out there in the general public, all 50 states right now, with me saying, pronouncing right now, hour two every Monday during the six-week run of Game of Thrones will be an hour of Game of Thrones discussion on this show? Do you think Stick to Sports Guy is going to lose his mind, or do you think there are a ton of people right now driving into work that are just giddy at the idea of us doing an hour every Monday in hour two to break down Game of Thrones?
Well, Stick to Sports Guy is always going to lose his mind if we're not talking, you know, who's going to be picked in the second round of the NFL draft at that point in time in the year. So, I mean, I'm not really too concerned with Stick to Sports Guy.
Stick to Sports Guy is the most, like, the minute that we start the Animal Thunderdome, he's like, what, Stick to Sports? Talk about yeah, second round draft picks is great. Talk about who somebody's going to take in the second. Talk about the wide receiver depth of the Green Bay Packers, please. I'm begging you. I just want solely sport. Yeah. So what do you think about that in general? I don't even know the answer to this question. Dub, you obviously watch Game of Thrones. Does everybody else on the show watch Game of Thrones?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. And it stays in line with how you've always done it, Clay, because I know in the past you would do a half hour on Game of Thrones every single Monday reacting. The only complaint we got from GOT fans was that if they hadn't seen it yet, they didn't want the spoilers.
Yeah, but to
remember?
Me, and I understand that argument, but to me, there are only six episodes to finish out the season. If you don't watch it live or that night, right? I'm not saying that, you know, for instance, on the West Coast, you know, you have an opportunity to have watched it. If you don't watch Game of Thrones that night, I feel like it's a little bit like saying I'm DVRing a sporting event. You can't be angry at somebody who is like within 12 hours of a sporting event being over. It'd be like, so if somebody called in and said, hey, I had to work, so I didn't get to watch Monday Night Football. Can you guys not talk about Monday Night Football till Wednesday? Be like, what? Or somebody saying, hey, I got to travel this Sunday, so I missed the entirety of the NFL. Can you guys wait until Tuesday to talk about what happened on the NFL over the weekend? No, that would be ludicrous. So I feel like that's a pretty strong play by us. Just letting everybody know right now that the second hour of the show every Monday, and it's also the time of the year, because what else coming out of the weekend is going to be a major? I mean, I guess we could talk NBA playoffs, but is anybody that excited about April NBA playoffs? Oh, the Warriors beat the crap out of the number 8 seed. The Bucks beat the crap out of the number 8 seed in the East. I mean, I don't think there's going to be that much drama. And then we got six straight weeks, and then we're into basically the summer. So I think that's actually, for surprisingly, given that he doesn't usually make very good contributions, Dub actually with a really good suggestion there. Now, is everybody acknowledging Eddie and Roberto? Do you guys also watch Game of Thrones?
Well, here's my issue. I don't have HBO. I haven't had it for a while. And Game of Thrones seems like something I would love. So my plan of action was once it was finished, I was going to like buy all the DVDs and then at some point just have an insane, you know, over months
binge.
Yeah. So I've only seen a couple of episodes. Obviously, I know some of what's going on because you just can't help but have some of it filter into your consciousness with social media and everything else. But I will try. You guys obviously do whatever you got to do. I will try my best to not listen, and then I'll just have somebody give me a finger and point at me when I have to talk or something. So do what you got to do, and I'll do my best to avoid it.
What percentage of our listeners do you think watch Game of Thrones? Like, it is good to put it into context. When this show is airing, I think this year, because every year it builds on itself, more and more people will end up watching. Every single year, because they do what Eddie just said he's going to do, like they binge and they catch up. I think that, and I'm not kidding about this, I think that Game of Thrones will be this year's finale, these final six episodes. I think, and this could be bold, but I think it's going to be accurate. I think other than the Super Bowl and the AFC and the NFC championship game, I think it will be 4 through 9, the next six most watched shows in America this year. Like, I think it'll outrate every NFL game otherwise. I think it will outrate every NBA Finals game, every college football game, including the playoffs, every one of the March Madness games. Like, that's how big of an audience I think this thing will produce. I think it'll be the 4th through 9th most popular. And it may, when you get into like the finale of the finales, it may give a run at the NFC and the AFC championship game. May get up there into that 40 or 50 million total viewership.
Yeah, I'm looking at HBO stats here. They regularly draw over 10 million viewers to each episode.
Yeah, but the way that also factors in is it's way more. It'll be way over 20 million. Because
by the time it's all said and done,
yeah, some people watch it on delay, and every year the numbers continue to grow because you can go back and binge it and catch up. So I'm just curious how much of an overlap that is in terms of our audience and Game of Thrones. But to me, I'm going to treat it like a sporting event, like the playoffs. You got a 6-week season, and every day, an hour or two, we will discuss and open up the phone lines and have a major breakdown of everything that took place. And we'll have to drop Eddie every second hour because evidently he hasn't been able to catch up.
Yeah, we'll tell Eddie when to turn his monitors down.
I don't feel bad at this point if you haven't caught up. You've had like, what year did Game of Thrones start? You've had like 5 years to catch up. So if you haven't been able to catch up, that's kind of on you. And if you can't steal somebody's HBO Go password to be able to watch it live or get a stream from Reddit where there's obviously a lot of obsession with Game of Thrones, then you're really not trying that hard. Remember, was it last season? I think it was the last season when they had that episode leak.
That's right.
A couple of episodes leaked on, and they were posted online. And so I think that there's no doubt this thing is going to continue to grow in popularity. And I write articles about it. We do a live reaction show on Outkick the Show, which is insanely popular. And so I'll do that every Sunday as soon as it ends.
April 17th, 2011 was the very first episode.
2011. So you've had 8 years to catch up now. 8 years. I mean, that's like when my second son was born. So yeah, I don't feel bad for you at all. Let's bring in Eddie Garcia, who has not seen any of the Game of Thrones yet.
Well, I saw one.
One episode?
Yeah.
Which episode did you see?
It was the one, and forgive me for not knowing the names of the characters, but it was like the king burned his daughter at the stake.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God.
How did you end up just watching that one episode?
I just happened to stumble across it at work. I was here at work. And so I'm like, I'm going to watch a little bit of this. And I was like, oh my God, this is sick, but in a wonderful way.
Sick, but in a wonderful way.
Yeah.
It's actually a decent description. What I always say is if you like sex and violence, you'll like Game of
orgies.
There used to be more orgies.
Yeah.
There used to be, thanks for hopping in, Alberto. Used to be more orgies. They've dialed back the sex and increased the violence of late. We'll see whether or not that continues. We're going to be joined here shortly by John Campbell, but I'm curious. I want to go around the horn here on the Sweet 16. Do you guys have a favorite play or bet in the Sweet 16? I'll start with you, Dub, because I know you like to gamble. Like, we got 12 games that are coming up on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 4 Thursday, 4 Friday. I'm trying to decide if Tennessee beats Purdue. I think I'm going to go up to Louisville and watch that Elite Eight game between Tennessee and either Virginia, probably, or Oregon if they were to pull off the upset. If Tennessee loses, I won't go. But I'm curious, do you have a favorite bet going into the weekend?
I mean, right now, I've been so impressed with Gonzaga. And I know Florida State's been playing really well, but Gonzaga right now, I mean, I think this is a team that has one goal, and that's making it to the Final Four and making it to the title game. And I don't think they're going to slip up one bit against Florida State. So I think the number right now is 6.5 or 7. I kind of like the Zags at that number right now.
Yeah, I am really kind of torn on a lot of these games because we have some big numbers out there, relatively speaking. And Duke was not very good, obviously, against Central Florida, but they now are a pretty massive favorite over Virginia Tech. I think, and this could be crazy, and this could be the homer in me, but I actually think Tennessee -1 against Purdue is a decent bet. Now, that's despite the fact that Tennessee has been really erratic. But I think they match up really well with Purdue, and I've bet all these games already on Lock It In. Do either anybody else on the show have a strong read on any Sweet 16 game that you love?
Well, I'm wondering if this is where Kentucky gets knocked out. I really like the way Houston is playing, and they definitely had the celebration of last weekend with the Super Soakers.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
It was awesome in the locker room, and I'm wondering if we will see another celebration like that by Houston.
To me, the biggest story from the Houston-Kentucky game is what's going on with P.J. Washington's injury. Kentucky is 6 points better when P.J. Washington is on the court. He came in. You know, they've replaced crutches now. Nobody uses crutches anymore. They all have these wheeling, like, I'm going to put my knee up on the wheeler or whatever, which seems to me almost more difficult than using crutches. But it'd be stunning to me for P.J. Washington to go from arriving in a hard cast on a wheel, you know, whatever those things are, roller, to suddenly being able to play against Houston. I think that's going to be a low-scoring, really defensive struggle. And I think there's a good shot Houston pulls off the upset there. The one thing that makes me a little bit nervous about that game is the fact that Kentucky basically lives under the microscope all year long. Everything that they do, they're used to playing in front of big crowds. They're used to big games. And Houston hasn't been to the Sweet 16 since 1984. So could the moment get too big for Houston late in a tight game? Yeah, I definitely think that could happen. Also, I think there's some Kelvin Sampson drama. Guy is an indisputably a great coach. Well, you now have got Texas A&M, which is open. You've got Arkansas open up now as a job. Mike Anderson was fired yesterday. You have got Alabama, which, I mean, I think there are a lot of schools that could make a run at Kelvin Sampson. And so I wonder a little bit about a distraction that could follow that team and whether or not that could end up hanging over this Houston team as well.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We are lining up for the anonymous mailbag live on the radio. Phone number straightforwardly 877-996-6369. If you're just waking up across the country, only really what I would say is substantial news in the world of sports. I'll give you a quick rundown here is that the NFL has expanded instant replay to now allow pass interference to be reviewed either called or non-called. It will basically be rolled into the existing instant replay system. Coaches will still have two challenges per half. If they throw the flag and they win both challenges, they will get a third challenge. And so that will not change. It'll just now be an expanded instant replay system. I think it makes a lot of sense. And there was a great deal of support from that among the coaches and the teams. So the NFL has gone and made the Rams-Saints play that determined who won the NFC in the championship game back in January. Now a non-issue going forward. That will never happen again where you have a blown call that big that has that impactful of an outcome. Importantly, all replay reviews in the final 2 minutes of the first half and the final 2 minutes of the game will be initiated by the booth. So coaches will be on the hook for the other 28 minutes in each half to determine whether or not they want to challenge. So phone number 877-996-6369. All we need is your state. Let's go ahead and start with Ohio. What you got for me? Oh, we got, sorry, yeah. We got to cue the music. Let's hear the music.
You've got
mail, mother.
Anonymous mail, babe.
If it was a problem, yo, I'll solve it.
All right, there is the music. Dub, what situation are we set up for? Who should I go to first?
We got Ohio up first and Ohio up second.
Ohio first and second out of the gate here in the anonymous mailbags. Ohio, what you got for me?
Hey, Clay. So I'm in a dilemma. On Friday, I got a call from my command that I'm going to be scheduled to go to a deployment overseas in the desert. And my wife recently got her birth control taken out because I toasted on New Year's that I'd give her a baby, and that's thrown the mix. So anytime now, she brings that up.
How long are you going to be? How long are you going to be deployed? How long will you be deployed?
It'll be 11 months.
11 months, and you leave when?
I'm going to be leaving in June.
So you told her, how old are you?
I'm 27.
And she around the same age? How old is she?
She's also 27.
All right, so you told her we can have a baby, you can pull the goalie starting in January, and she's all excited that she's going to have a baby, and then you're getting shipped to where? What country?
Afghanistan.
All right, so, and I'm not, I know obviously we have a lot of people who are in the armed services who listen, armed forces. How many visits do you get? So you're going to be over there for 11 months. How many times will you get to come back and for how long?
It all depends, but usually commands are pretty understanding on letting you, you know, maybe take 2-3 days to come back for the birth of your child.
Yeah.
But it all depends on what the situation is. So I can't give her a definitive answer whether I'd be coming home or not.
Yeah, yeah, right. And so, but do you get a long form of leave? Like, do you get like 2 weeks halfway through? I mean, that's what I'm kind of getting at in terms of vacation.
Yeah, no, you know, it all depends on I guess the deployment. Sometimes, you know, they give you 2 weeks worth of leave or chargeable leave you can take, and other times, you know, you have to just take it when you get back.
Yeah,
they
okay.
Cash it out.
Okay. Thanks for the question. So, I mean, basically the dilemma he's got here is he lives in June. If you've pulled the goalie starting in January, your wife is hoping she's going to get pregnant, but she might have to do the entire pregnancy without you being present. He leaves in June, and then he won't come back. Let's say he leaves in June of 19, would not come back again until whatever the math is on that, May of 20. So if she got pregnant, let's say right now, the first several months of the baby, like he would not be present for there. And the reason why I was asking about the vacation was I was curious on that. And also the challenge is it's great if you can get leave for a couple of days or 3 days to fly all the way back from Afghanistan for the birth of a baby. But here's the truth. I mean, you just don't know when that labor is going to happen or when the baby is going to be born, especially that first baby. Oftentimes are a little bit late, but you never know for sure. So I think the challenge is if you know you have to be gone for 11 months, to me, and look, she may feel differently. First of all, the way you have this conversation is you sit down with her and say, look, I understand you want to have a baby. You're 27. I'm 27. Next year, I will be 28. I would rather be here for the entire pregnancy with you than not. The other option is, you know, you go back to birth control. If you get a couple of weeks off during that 11-month deployment, and again, you're not sure if you would get that, then if you come back after a few months, you could try then. And then if she got pregnant, you'd be back in time for the birth of the baby. But I don't know. I mean, I think that's more of the woman's decision than it is yours. But being pregnant and not having your husband there for the entire time of your pregnancy as well as the birth, that seems like a pretty stressful situation for your wife, especially once she has the baby and you're not there to help out in any way with a young child. So I would suggest waiting. It's not like you chose to deploy. That's just what you're being assigned to. And truthfully, the difference between her having a baby at 27, 28, or 29 is really not that. It's not like she's 38, you know. In the grand scheme of things, I don't think it will change that much. May disappoint her, but I would wait. We go to, who are we going to now, Dub?
We got Ohio again.
Ohio again. Ohio, what you got for me?
So, I got a question for you. I want you to pretend like you're black. So, if I'm a black Trump supporter, and with all the winning that's been going on, you have this issue where Trump's basically exonerated by the Mueller report. You have the lawyer that has been indicted, and then you have his co-conspirator that was a lawyer for Colin Kaepernick that's under scrutiny. What's your thoughts on the right amount of gloating or the right amount of outward support, because the issue really isn't for blacks with other Caucasians where the issue is, or other Hispanics. It's actually within their own black community where they have the trouble of speaking out and being vocal of their support of conservatives. So I just was introducing.
Are you a black Trump supporter?
Yes.
All right. Thanks for the call. I don't think you would gloat any more based on your race. If your side of the political equation is having a good run, I think you got to treat it like a run that your football team or your basketball team or your baseball team gets on. Like, I told you that my team was going to win is basically politics. You're just on a team, right? You're on the Republican team. You're on the Democrat team. You're on I hate every politician and they all stinks team. So whenever there is evidence to support your team being good, you got to gloat, right? And so Trump has been on a good run here. If you're anti-Trump guy, this is like the New England Patriot dynasty rising up and beating you again. Because you've been like, hey, they're fine. Like, I know, because I was anti-Patriot guy, right? I'm like, this is the year the Patriot dynasty is finally going to collapse. They're average. They're getting their butts kicked. They lost to the Dolphins. They couldn't even stop a Hail Mary, you know, hook and ladder play. Titans kicked their ass. Lions whipped them. Jags whipped them, and I was like, man, this is the year that the Patriots are finally going down. They're totally average, And then they get in the playoffs, and I thought, man, this is going to be so sweet. They're going to lose to the Chargers. They beat the Chargers. Then I was like, well, they beat the Chargers, but you know what's going to happen? The Chiefs are going to get them. And then the Chiefs choke it away. They can't line up on sides. They take away an interception. Chiefs lose. Get into overtime, still lose. And then I'm like, well, the Rams will take them. And then we get into the Super Bowl, and the Rams can't get it done either. And so I feel like for anti-Trump guy, he feels a little bit like he's going up against the Patriots right now. The Mueller report comes out. It's supposed to be like, oh, this is gonna nail Trump to the wall. He's done. He's going to get impeached. And Trump just dunked all over everybody, balls to the wall style. It's like Scottie Pippen dunking on Patrick Ewing. All the hardcore liberals were out there. They were like, man, we're going to block this shot. And Scottie Pippen slash Donald Trump just rolled up, balls to the face style, and just dunked on him. That was basically the Mueller report. And then you got all the, like, Michael Avenatti or whatever, who's like the Mr. I hate Donald Trump. He's going to be impeached. He's awful. He gets indicted on the East Coast, on the West Coast, and on the Gulf Coast. My man was lying and scheming, according to the allegations, on every beach in America. Got him on the East Coast, got him on the West Coast. They even got him on the Gulf Coast. He was even working fraud, allegedly, on a Biloxi, Mississippi bank. And so this is a rough time for Donald Trump critics. I think Trump might, maybe Trump's going to go out and have sex with another porn star to celebrate. I don't know what he's going to, maybe multiple porn stars. He might make a sex film. He might come out with his own sex tape and just drop it and be like, boom, I like to have sex with porn stars, and here's my porn tape. It's going to be my number one campaign slogan for 2020. Trump gets it in. It's going to replace Make America Great Again. New slogan's going to be Trump gets it. Trump gets it in. I don't know. Let's keep rolling. Let's go to Colorado. Colorado just dropped.
We just lost Colorado, and I want him to call back because the brief screen I had with him, he said he has an issue with an employee that always shows up drunk, which, I mean, is something you can probably relate to with an employee of yours that will remain unnamed.
Yeah, and by employee of yours that shows up drunk, you mean yourself. And by the way, you say you were bamboozled and led astray, and you were basically jaw-ruled there with the call that came in from Ohio, part two.
Yeah, that second Ohio caller, he called me and he said he wanted to ask you about NCAA basketball ratings and whether it's because of Zion Williamson or sports gambling. So I was led pretty astray there on that one.
We got a big studio question. What you guys got for me in L.A.?
This is the anonymous mailbag, so this is...
Say your name.
This is anonymous.
Yes. Yes.
Sherman Oaks, California.
So, Clay, I went to Europe back in October.
Yeah, I saw it. I did meet someone in Europe who might work
on
the
show. Oh, is that right? Oh, that's interesting. So my wife and I went over there for the Chargers-Titans game and to go to Paris and whatnot. So anyway, my wife was afraid to take her wedding ring because she thought she'd lose it. Maybe we'd get mugged or something. She was real paranoid about getting... anyway. So she hid her wedding ring. Now, fast forward 5 months later, she still doesn't know where it is. She can't remember where she hid it. Now, I thought, you know, when we got back, we'd eventually
come across it. Let's pause here for
a second. All right.
If you guys were super famous, because I talk about this with my wife sometimes. My wife is always afraid of losing her wedding ring, too. And so she's, you know, like always taking it off when she's like, you know, going to the shower or whatever, or like washing dishes or whatever else. She doesn't want to lose it down the drain. And I'm like, you realize if we were super famous, that's like 95% of the stories that they do in these celebrity magazines. It's like so-and-so were out and this bride, you know, this wife didn't have her wedding ring on. Dun, dun, dun. And it's always like, yeah, maybe she was just washing the dishes. Maybe she was just running out, you know, to go to get, you know, a Starbucks and it's 6 a.m. But that, have you noticed that? Or am I the only person who looks at all these celebrity magazines? Like a huge percentage of the time, evidence that the marriage is on the rocks is woman is out without her wedding ring on. All right. But so I cut you off. So if you guys were super famous, this would be on all the time, right? Like this would be on.
Yeah, so thank God we're not.
So
super
5 months is a long time. All right. Continue.
It is. So she thought, and this is not the first time that she has done this. Not that wasn't with her wedding ring, but she will have something that is important to her, and we'll go out of town, and she'll put it somewhere because she's paranoid about things, people breaking in, and then she'll forget where she hides it, and eventually she usually finds it. So It's been 5 months. She thought she hid it in our walk-in closet. We took everything. My God, I couldn't believe how much stuff we had in our walk-in closet. We took everything out of our walk-in closet. We went through everything, every pocket and jackets, purses, everything. We still couldn't find it. So now she's kind of bringing up, I want to get another ring.
How much did the ring cost?
I don't want to say how much the ring cost.
I mean, was it more or less than a month's salary?
It was more.
Okay.
It was more.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to convince her to not yet. Let's look a little more. We've thrown out there like having a family and friends party, like invite everyone over, feed them, and then just like ransack through the whole house trying to find it.
Is she certain that it's at the house?
Yes. I've even floated the idea of maybe hypnotism or something like that to contact someone and maybe they could help. Before I have to buy a new ring, I'll do
whatever. How big is your house?
It's a two-story house.
I mean, but like 2,000 square feet? Like,
yeah, it's bigger than that.
4,000?
Yeah.
But geez, how much do they pay you? This is like...
Wow, Eddie's a baller.
5,000?
No. It's like...
It's between 4,000 and 5,000 square feet.
It's probably about 3,000.
All right, it's about 3,000. So I would invite everybody. Like, to me, if you know it's in the house, I would invite every single person over, and I would treat this like we are... I mean, if you said it's over a month's salary... I would treat this like it is, like you sometimes see those movies where like the FBI rolls in and they just rip through every single possible aspect of the house. I would treat that in this similar fashion and just tear the house apart, because if you're going to spend thousands of dollars on a ring, then I think that you have to be in a position to make sure that it's lost. Also, this is where you have to step in. Your wife was nervous that you were going to get mugged in Europe. Is she aware that Los Angeles is infinitely more dangerous from a crime perspective than either London or Paris?
Well, before we went to Paris, she did a lot of research, and she like overly probably researched things. And she heard all these tales about people getting mugged in Paris. So she was, I mean, she really was overboard.
But you realize that that's what people hear. Like if you are from, let's say, Australia or Europe or some other country or some other, region where it's comparatively safe. Like, they think when they come to America that they're just going to be walking down the street and people are going to be carrying around submachine guns and just start firing at each other. I mean, they think it's Grand Theft Auto over here. And compared to, like, Australia, that's what it is. But if you go to Europe, because I had to make this decision. You guys remember a couple of years ago, we went to London and Paris. That was our family vacation. And it was right after they had a terror attack in London. And they had that guy with like the sword. Do you remember that? In London, and like they had the guy driving up on the bridge. I think it was the London Bridge or whatever it was, and like mowed down some motorists. And I was like, man, I'm taking my whole family over there. So I looked into the numbers, and we would have gone to, for instance, Chicago, and not even blinked twice, or Detroit, or someplace like that. And the crime rate in Chicago and Detroit was off the charts compared to the crime rate in London. So sometimes just paying attention to a handful of media reports gives you an artificial sense for how much danger there is. We don't think twice about traveling anywhere really in the United States, but when we were going to London, we were nervous because of the stories and the terror attack and everything else that had happened. And so we went. It was perfectly safe, and we were infinitely safer there. But I think certainly if you have a family, you'll contemplate that in a different way. Let's go to Ohio, another Ohio call. Ohio is filled with problems. What you got?
Hey, Clay.
Hey, what's up, man?
So I got a quick question. So I have been working at my job for about 10 months. It's my first job out of college. And I kind of, picked things up pretty well. And they just hired a new guy who has quite a bit more experience than I do and made him essentially the supervisor of a handful of people. But the guy basically has, no idea what he's doing. So we're all having to teach him things and kind of hold his hand through stuff. And no one seems to realize that, just because your resume says something doesn't mean you're, competent. So
what do you, so if you work for somebody who's more incompetent than you are, Well, first of all, you've only been at this job for, thanks for the call, and you've only been at your job for 10 months. And the younger you are, the more significant 10 months seems. But take it from someone who's going to turn 40 next week. 10 months is nothing. When you are young, you're like, oh my God, I've been doing, like, we've been dating for 10 months. You're like, yeah, okay. Like, that's not that big of a deal. But when you're 24, you're like, man, I've been with this girl for 10 months. Like, that's a long relationship. Yeah, no, it isn't. All right. It seems like a lot because your life is relatively short. It's the same thing I always say when guys are like, when you're in college and if you're an athlete and you have to transfer, man, I got to sit out for a whole year. When you're 18, a year seems like forever. You're like, oh my God, can you believe that I'm going to have to sit out for a whole year? And you remember this when you were in school, like there's a big difference between fourth and fifth grade. There ain't that much difference between 44 and 45. So 10 months is not that long. It oftentimes happens that somebody gets a job because of their resume and they are not prepared for that job and they have to be trained by the people who are there. Good example, we had a guy call in who's getting deployed. This happens in the Army all the time. The sergeant has been with the group for a decade, two decades. The sergeant knows infinitely more than the lieutenant or the captain who comes in and takes over in a particular management area. The reason why the lieutenant or the captain, who is a greenhorn and maybe young and not know very much, is in charge is because eventually his training is going to lead him to be able to be a better leader as he spends more time and acclimates himself with that situation. So a supervisor not being very good for a relatively short amount of time is understandable that he would have to get caught up to speed. The question is he eventually going to be caught up to speed and be able to go in a direction and a distance that others cannot get to? And if he can't, then I think that's when you raise an issue. But you got to be careful here. It's not like you've been there for 10 years. You've been there for 10 months. So you going in and saying this guy has no idea what he's doing, the boss might well be like, dude, you've been here 10 months. You got no idea what you're doing. Trust me on the decisions that I've made. And also understand that people, it's just like when you're a coach. You want to be working for the AD and the school president that hired you because they got your back. When it's a 50-50 situation, they're going to come down on your side. If your boss's boss hired your new boss, saying that his hire is incompetent is a good way to alienate yourself from your boss because he'll think what you're doing is questioning his decision-making, and then you're in a tough spot. Because you think you know better, not just than your boss, but also your boss's boss.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
It's not Michael Jackson, but it's a version of Michael Jackson. Seems like a questionable move. Who made the call there?
That was me.
That was Roberto's call, but I back it. If we're not allowed to play Mike anymore... Some of the songs still need to stay alive. They're still classic songs.
It's a tough call.
This is Alien Ant Farm, so it's the alternative rock version.
It's an alternative, but the Michael Jackson documentary, I think it's too soon.
D-Bap, Clay.
No, I think it's too soon. I think we got to stick off, hang a little bit of time off before we go back to Michael Jackson.
It's not Michael Jackson, though. It's Alien Ant Farm.
Yeah, it's his song. He's getting paid for that when we play it.
It's actually Alien Ant Farm's song.
Yeah, it is. They're the one singing.
No. If you cover somebody else's song, they make all the money. Questionable move by Roberto. Usually Roberto's good on the music. Usually he's good. I think it's questionable to go with a Michael Jackson song just after that documentary coming out. Just a questionable move. Geico Outkick Studios here. Well, ask Chad Withrow what he thinks about this. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit Geico.com for a free rate quote. And we're brought to you by TrueCar. When it comes to selling or trading in your car, you need to make good choices. And with TrueCar, you've got a star on your roster. So when you're ready to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar. True cash offer not available in all areas. I got to say, when I hear any Michael Jackson song right now, I think about him getting married to a 7-year-old boy. That's what I think. Eddie, what do you think? Questionable move?
Yeah, I'd say a little bit questionable. Yeah,
I think so. Bring in my guy Chad Withrow at Withrow Zone. Withrow, what do you think about the Michael Jackson cover there? Questionable move on the staff?
Danny's my guy. I don't know Roberto is playing the music, but it is a highly questionable move to play any cover of Michael Jackson, any Michael Jackson song.
Clay, I can actually one-up that, though. I was recently calling a high school basketball state championship game on TV, and in the arena for the high school basketball state championship game, they were playing R. Kelly's I Believe I Can Fly. My mind was blown. I actually had to reference it during the broadcast.
Classic.
I could not believe my ears that during a high school sporting event of all things, with everything going on, they were playing an R. Kelly song.
Yeah, my bet would be that they just have like a Jock Jams thing that they licensed and nobody actually looks at the roster of what the songs are, right? You know, because there's so many copyright violations and everything else associated with these events that I guarantee you they just licensed like, you know, Jock Jams volume 114 to play during the breaks and nobody has actually looked at it. But I watched that Michael Jackson documentary like the first hour and 20 minutes, and I had to turn it off when he started talking about how he got married to a 7-year-old and bought him like a wedding ring and everything else. And so when I hear any Michael Jackson song right now, not to say the songs are not awesome, I just immediately think about him marrying a 7-year-old.
Yeah, I watched all 4 hours of that documentary, and I've always been the type of guy who, if someone gets in trouble for something, I can usually separate the act from the art.
Yeah.
So if there's an actor that's in trouble, it's not going to make me stop watching his movies or his television show if I like it. Same goes for musicians. That documentary changed things for me. I was a huge Michael Jackson fan of his music, and having watched that's the first time that I can't listen to anything Michael Jackson the same way ever again after watching all 4 hours of that documentary.
Yeah, it's tough because, like I said, as soon as we came back, even though it was a cover by a different band, my first thought is immediately about that documentary. And so I'm not a guy like, you know, who usually says, hey, probably we shouldn't touch that. But probably we shouldn't touch that because I think there's probably a lot of people out there right now. And maybe that's going to change over the next decade. I think if Michael Jackson was still alive, he would spend the rest of his life in prison. And so maybe it's a good thing that he died. And maybe, honestly, you can argue that Bill Cosby should have died 10 years ago because his legacy would be entirely different than it was with Michael Jackson. But at least with Bill Cosby, even if you want to defend Bill Cosby, you can say, well, it's a he said, she said. Now, there are a lot of she said saying Bill Cosby misbehaved and was guilty of crimes. But at least they were crimes perpetrated against adults. The Michael Jackson thing, to me, the allegations are so much worse than the allegations against Bill Cosby from a legal perspective. But I think, you know, and R. Kelly obviously has got his own issues associated with that. So anyway, those guys are all on the bad side of history right now in the short term.
With Bill Cosby, it's just one very well done HBO documentary away from everyone seeing something like that and all the allegations on screen to where no one wants to be associated with Bill Cosby anymore.
The Bill Cosby thing is a little bit different to me because the Cosby Show was obviously he was a huge part of the Cosby Show, but that show in general, it doesn't mean that the show was not worthy of being watched, right? Like, he is an actor playing a role. The Cosby Show is still really a really good show, and I'm a little bit different on that version than I am Michael Jackson, right? Maybe that's unfair of me, but if I had to choose between which one of those guys is guilty of the most indefensible acts, I think that Michael Jackson would be by far and away much worse off than Bill Cosby, even though Bill Cosby appears to be a bad guy in many ways. I think Michael Jackson is a worse guy.
Hey, Chad, really quick, though, we should point out that just a few weeks ago, Clay had us play the Ignition remix from R. Kelly.
Yeah, I did have us play. Well, first of all.
So Clay never usually stares away from controversy.
It is true. But I didn't watch the R. Kelly documentary.
Well, that makes it right.
Well, no. But I mean, like, the Michael Jackson documentary is much worse. Like, R. Kelly's defense, so far as I understand it, and I'm not trying to make a legal defense for him, was that he didn't know the girls were underage, right? That these, my understanding is his defense is, I didn't know that these women that I'm alleged to have slept with were underage. And it's not like they were 8, right? Like, they were at least of a adult age close to it, right? They were proximate to adult age. And by proximate to adult age, I mean everybody has a different age of consent. So some states are 16, some states are 18, whatever it is. The Michael Jackson case, it was a 7-year-old boy and a 10-year-old boy, right? Like, that is like, maybe I'm wrong. I don't think there's any allegations that R. Kelly was sleeping with a 7-year-old. So that, like, at least his defense is, hey, I was wrong on the age. I don't think there's any Michael Jackson defense that's out there. His defense has to be, this never happened, and I just believe these kids. Having watched an hour and a half of that documentary, like, it was pretty devastating. And then did you watch the Oprah thing afterwards, Withrow?
I have not seen the Oprah part of it. But, Clay, with that defense you just laid out for R. Kelly, I would love for you to be my defense attorney if I'm accused of anything, ever.
Well, I mean, look, I mean,
that was quite the stretch.
I will defend, like, that's my job, right? When you're a defense, I defended murderers, all right? I defended people accused of sexual assault. I defended people, drug dealers. Like, that's the job when you are a defense attorney. You
have
to come
Michael
in.
Would you have defended Michael Jackson?
Would I defend him?
Would you have defended him?
I mean, I think those situations, honestly, my answer would be different before and after I had children. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
I think, first of all, lawyers have to make decisions about whether or not they think they can provide an adequate defense for someone, even if they are accused of heinous crimes. For me, it is harder to defend Michael Jackson now that I am a parent than it would have been before I was a parent. I have an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old. So for me, like, my kids are almost the identical ages of those boys that were alleged to have been victims of Michael Jackson. So I think when you become a parent, you think oftentimes in a different way than you did before you were a parent. Like, so I think it would be much harder for me to defend Michael Jackson now with kids this age than it would have been when I was 27 years old and I didn't have any kids yet, and I was still a lawyer. So, look, lawyers make decisions about what cases to get involved in. And sometimes they make decisions based on money, because lawyers are paid based on whether their clients can pay or not. And sometimes they make decisions based on whether or not they believe that justice demands that they take a case. And I think certainly the Michael Jackson case is one where you make that decision based on money. And so if I had enough money, that's probably a case that I would choose not to take. But I don't think that you should judge lawyers based on the clients that they undertake, because there are plenty of people that I have represented that were accused of heinous acts that I don't think reflect on me as being a bad person. Constitutionally, we require defense attorneys to defend. Now, also, it can get into you meet with the client. You meet with the client and you find out, hey, do I believe this client is being railroaded? What evidence is out there? And so I wouldn't have been an expert in all those aspects.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.